City's News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. My name is John Justice. Thank you so much for checking out the show. Remember, if you miss any portion, you can get caught up on the podcast on the iHeartRadio app once the show wraps up at 9 o'clock. Producer Robbie joining me in studio, as he does every Tuesday during the legislative session, State Representative Walter Hudson. Late night last night?
They're all late nowadays. The sleep is hard to come by as a legislator, particularly in the minority under a trifecta.
Well, and I know that there's some breaking news we want to get into. And this is going to dominate probably the majority of our conversation relating to some movement last night on the Human Rights Act. We're talking about religious freedom and hiring practices, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so we're going to get into that. I got a couple of items, though, that I want to kind of run through during this legislative session. We still have some time to go on, and I was sort of getting ahead in my mind in terms of the calendar and talking about heading towards the end of the legislative session. But we still have until May, which means there's plenty of damage that can be done. To what you mentioned a moment ago, though, it was funny. I have two different articles here. I thought these were two separate things, but they're the same. It's just the way they were worded. So Kara Levin's version of this was amendment would end lawmakers' deadline. Proposed change to Constitution would eliminate the mandate that legislators adjourn late. But then the story from Alpha News kind of hit the nail on the head. Minnesota Democrats proposed a bill that would allow for a full-time legislature.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what this is. And it took me, I had to get into the details of the story to make sure I wasn't looking at two separate things. Not that I'm surprised that this is how it was framed within our local media. So all government all the time. Is that what they want to do, Walter Hudson?
Yeah, I actually dispute the terminology full time legislature. I think it's a little bit misleading because I would argue that we're full time now. What it is it's year-round legislative session. That's what they're talking about. Year-round legislative session. If you're doing this job properly, if you're actually putting in the work to represent your district, you're full-time year-round right now. Because when you're not in St. Paul, you're in your community, meeting with constituents, engaging, with groups, and learning what people's values and positions are. And in turn, how to represent those down at the legislature. But you can't do that. What this would do is it would actually disrupt that process. It would further disconnect elected legislators from the people who they represent and make it more difficult for people to have their values reflected in policy, which we can already see is not happening.
Now, this would put it more in line with kind of what takes place at the federal level. Isn't that some of the arguments Yes. that they've been proposing? Can you talk a little bit about, I know you just laid it out, but sort of the differences there between the way that they do it in Congress and then the way that we do it here and why those two things shouldn't be the same.
Well, listen, you know, I'm not deeply familiar with how things work in Washington, D.C., but I can certainly tell you we see a whole lot less of our Congress people than we do of our state legislators. Yeah. And you see a whole lot less of your state legislators than you do of your mayor and your city council. Right. And so the more disconnected and the more distant you are from the people who are making critically important decisions about how your life is going to work, I think the less it can be argued that we actually have anything resembling a representative democracy.
Well, then in terms of, and listen, just from a fiscal standpoint, in terms of resources of being able to do that, I know some of the arguments that were laid out from those Republicans in the state legislature was, listen, I got to travel already. They're happy to do so,
right.
But they already have to travel. When you're looking at sort of the difference between what happens at the federal level and the state level, I mean, just in terms of resources, the resources that you as a body just don't have compared to those that are serving in our federal government as well. If we needed another example, that was the one right. That kind of stuck out to me. But no, what I saw here, my gut reaction to this was the DFL in sort of assuming that they still have power and control and just a real time crafting of laws on the issues as they arrive.
Yep.
That's terrifying.
Well, it's terrifying because of the content of what they've been bringing forward.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's no point in even starting to tick down the list, but it's all insane. And the more time they have to stuff more insanity down your throat, the worse off we're all going to be. I do not think it's a good idea.
Let's go here. A new budget calls for cash for EMS emergency child tax credits. I was frustrated this morning because, honestly, I couldn't find a lot of details. Governor Tim Walz unveiled his 2024 supplemental budget proposal yesterday. Maybe that's the reason why local news hasn't been able to go and comb through it. This year's $226 million budget proposal is focused on just a few smaller priorities. The governor has labeled safe communities, clean drinking water, support for children and families. The funding will also support ambulance services, provide grants to organizations that help crime victims, provide help for in-home water treatment or well replacement for Minnesotans. He did reiterate, Walz did, that it's a bonding year and not a budget year. He has proposed his $989 million bonding bill to address more water, transportation, housing, and infrastructure priorities. So again, I wasn't able to find a ton on this. The EMS emergency on that, he says he agrees, a bipartisan group of legislators who declare there's an EMS emergency last month. But while they're asking for $120 million in resuscitation, the governor is proposing $16 million. So have you had a chance to look at this at all? You have any thoughts on this?
No, but I will say that providing one-tenth of needed resources for critical services is certainly on brand for the Democrats. They're doing the same thing with the Department of Corrections, where we have 33%. That's one-third of the state's deferred maintenance, meaning that our facilities, our prisons, are literally crumbling and falling apart. In order to bring them up to fair condition, just fair, not good, not acceptable, but okay, we would need $750 million. Instead, we're spending that money on a palace for politicians right next to the Capitol currently. And I believe the bonding allocation for DOC is roughly $70 million. So again, that one-tenth of needed resources, definitely on brand for the Democrats, because they're too busy giving money to their friends and nonprofits. Yeah, as you were going through the list of all the happy-sounding rainbow rhetoric of what the budget priorities are, I was able to eagerly interpret that as them giving away money to their own for political purposes through their nonprofits. That's what they're doing.
You know, it's just as a quick side note to what you were talking about with the state capitol and the renovations. Pioneer Press has a story this morning, redesigning the state capitol mall in 10 bold moves. I mean, I'm on its face, I'm wondering how much these graphics themselves cost. Just looking at the level of detail,
right? Yeah,
in the community commons and what they're proposing. And I just want to add, this is anecdotal. Again, State Representative Walter Hudson joins me in the studio, but it's something that I heard that really, really stuck with me yesterday. I was listening to some NASCAR commentary because I love my NASCAR, and they were talking about these smaller, low budgeted truck teams that are out there, right? The lower rungs of the series. And there was one team that's doing very well, and they made a comment that this team spends all of their resources and money just on the vehicles, to the point of their own facility where they house all of their cars. Their team, they don't even have a sign outside. It's like, we don't need to pay. Why do we need a sign? Mm-hmm. Why do we need to have this out front? Is this going to help our team run faster? Putting up a nice graphic sign out in front of our facility. No, it's not. So we're going to spend our money over here. And it's just one of those things that really stuck out. And then I see this morning, you know, what they want to do with the state capitol. And
Yeah, that's not how they think.
No, of course not. Of course not. It's a dream to think that they ever would think that way. All right. One more and then we'll get to the big one from last night. Uber and Lyft ready to drive out of Minneapolis after the city council approved the ordinance Thursday to pay the rideshare drivers more. So, according to the story that I have here in front of me, GOP lawmakers introduced a bill on Monday designed to keep the companies around. House Republicans say their bill would block the local rideshare regulations to entice Uber and Lyft to stay in the city past their deadline of May 1st, enacting wider-reaching state rules. We had a friend of the show, Max Reimer, on Friday. He was very much against this idea. In his mind, he wants this to move forward and for the voters in the city of Minneapolis to feel the pain of which they've inflicted upon them, upon themselves with regard to preemption, I believe we were talking about. Mm-hmm. So What are your thoughts on this moving forward and what has happened here in Minneapolis relating to rideshare?
Well, I certainly respect Max a great deal, and I understand where he's coming from, and there may be circumstances where I would agree with that strategic approach. However, as when I called in, when you guys were having that conversation, as I noted at that time, I don't think it's realistic, given the track record of these Democrats, to expect that they're actually going to go along with this. So if we thought that there was even the most remote possibility that the Democrats will actually act in sane fashion against the lunatics running Minneapolis, then, yeah, that strategic question would need to be raised. But they won't. I mean, if they have demonstrated time and time again that there's no level of insanity they won't all universally sign on to. I mean, we're about to cover another example of that from overnight. So I don't think that's a realistic strategic consideration. And I'll be happy to eat my hat, right? If it is and they do go along with it, well, then, you know, we can talk about how it was perhaps a strategic mistake. But just to the concept of preemption itself, the idea that as a state, we're going to tell cities how they can and cannot regulate. There's a certain style of libertarian argument that says that's somehow inappropriate. Look, Minneapolis, through its irresponsibility, its negligence, its malfeasance, is endangering the rest of the state, both literally in terms of their approach to public safety, and now economically in terms of driving businesses out of the region. I mean, if you think that not being able to use rideshare in Minneapolis is only going to affect people who live in Minneapolis, you haven't thought it through.
No. There's a great piece, actually, in Center of the American Experiment, John Phelan has, that I've got in my stack, talking about the consequences of this beyond the city of Minneapolis. And I'm going to be interested to see how they react if these other rideshare-like companies attempt to go and enter into the market in the absence of Uber and Lyft, because we know that, I mean, there was a desire to drive these rideshare companies out to go and benefit a certain demographic and the cab companies in the city of Minneapolis. So it'll be interesting to see what their reaction is if they have more competition that arise here in Minneapolis and what they decide to do.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the big one this morning. And I saw a post yesterday from Harry Niska talking about the potential of discussion and movement relating to the Human Rights Act, talking about the religious hiring practices here in the state. Haven't talked about it. It kind of died off for a while. We haven't discussed it. But what took place last night in St. Paul?
Well, just to reset for everyone, in case you missed the discussion we had a couple of weeks ago, the Human Rights Act was changed last year in 2023 to add gender identity as a distinct protected class. Previously, it had been what the lawyers call subsumed within sexual orientation. And sexual orientation was in part of a religious exemption to the Human Rights Act that enabled religious communities, churches, mosques, synagogues, what have you, to conduct their business without having to violate their most sacred held beliefs regarding sexuality. As the concept of gender identity emerged in the culture, we got to this point last year where they decided to add it as a distinct protected class in the Human Rights Act, but they did not add that new protected class into the religious exemption. That had the effect, through the letter of the law, of now making it so that if, for instance, your church were to put up a posting for a youth pastor and a trans woman, as they call them, were to walk in and apply for the job, and you said, no, we can't have you here in that role because that is a fundamental violation of our most basic and sacred beliefs, and the purpose for which we exist is to uphold those beliefs, you can now be subject to lawsuit under this change in law. And so recognizing that, a number of religious groups and Republicans gave Democrats the maximum benefit of doubt.
Right.
And assumed this has to be an oversight. There's just no way they could possibly be actually denying the most fundamental American right that predates the government itself, right? The idea of religious liberty, the reason why the pilgrims came here to the New World to escape religious persecution. There's no way they're taking the wrong side of that coin, right? Turns out they are, quite explicitly. A couple weeks back in the House Judiciary Committee, Harry Niska attempted to fix this via an amendment to the proposed Human Rights Department policy bill. That was not just rejected on party lines by Democrats, but it also came along with a hefty dose of them telling us that our religious views are wrong, hateful, in the same category as chattel slavery, and that there's no place for Bible-believing Christians or faithful Jews or faithful Muslims in the state of Minnesota. That's what they said, okay? So the response to that was justifiably intense. And the bill was to be heard in the Senate Judiciary Committee about a week later, and it was pulled quietly. And so the reason why we haven't been talking about it is because work has been taking place behind the scenes to try to pressure and ensure that this was going to get fixed. Last night, while you slept, the Senate Judiciary Committee heard this agency bill from the Department of Human Rights. They were once again presented with the opportunity via amendment to correct this not in oversight, according to Chair Becker Finn in the House. They refused again. They voted on party lines again to deny you your most fundamental religious freedom, to nullify the First Amendment, to cancel your religious expression and your freedom of association. We now have Democrats on the record saying this is not an oversight. This was their intention. And I want to be very clear about what this means. This means that Chair Becker Finn, at the very least, because she explicitly said so, conspired against the rights of Minnesotans. Okay? All this talk about insurrection and conspiracy and attacks against democracy, Chair Becker Finn literally said it was not an oversight when she conspired against your First Amendment rights. That's the reality. And every Democrat in both the House and Senate Judiciary Committees has now affirmatively voted to go along with that and say, yep, we're conspirators too. Yep, we're oath breakers too. Yep, we're against the First Amendment too. And I got to tell you, I'm not in charge of these things, but I'm pretty certain that very soon, every other Democrat in both chambers is going to be presented with the opportunity to declare whether or not they're going to keep their oath or break it. And it's going to be, ironically, a binary choice.
Did they put their finger to the winds to determine in the time since the last time we discussed this, when this was going through the House, there was a lot of religious organizations that came out very concerned about what they were seeing. And they were making public statements with regard to this. And
yeah,
there was, again, and again, there was this, like, even when heading into it and trying to give the benefit of the doubt to the DFL that this was an oversight, and then having the House do what they did, the DFLers, and going, okay, well, apparently it wasn't. And then, at least for me, there was this, all right, well, if the religious institutions that are going to be in jeopardy of losing their religious freedom hiring practices are speaking out, then perhaps now we'll see some rational thought. Now, apparently that hasn't happened. So did they just basically see the risk versus reward here, and they've collectively thrown their finger up at the religious community over this?
Let me put it like this.
Okay.
Over the past couple of weeks, there has been no shortage of aggressive lobbying from clergy and groups associated with every Abrahamic faith in this state. We've literally had bishops walking around the Capitol meeting with legislators for 2 weeks. There is a higher priesthood in the state of Minnesota. There is a God that has been put in place of yours in the state of Minnesota. They don't care what your bishop thinks. They don't care what your pastor says. They don't care what your scripture declares or what your God commands. They are your God now. That's what Minnesota Democrats are telling you. And it's up to you. Listen, let me speak to you, the listener. I know you knew you never thought you were going to be faced with this moment, but you're faced with it. You are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You are Daniel. Are you going to pray three times a day with your window open on the top floor for all to see facing Jerusalem? Or are you going to let your children be taken captive into Babylon? That's the choice. And so you need to organize. You need to call your pastor today, right now. Pick up the phone and call them. Tell them what's happening. Organize your church. Organize your synagogue. Organize your mosque. You need to get on the mailing lists of the Catholic Conference and the Minnesota Family Council. You need to abide by their action alerts. You need to sign up for my legislative update. Google Representative Walter Hudson, official House page. Sign up for my email updates. You need to know what's going on, and you need to act. You need to act as if your God is worthy of being served. Or, you know, maybe you don't actually believe that.
Is there any way to access, is it public record? Let's just say conversations that are taking place between high-ranking members of the religious community and DFLers with regard to this. And I ask this because I'd like to know what's being said behind the scenes. This is being driven in large part because of gender identity, LGBTQ issues. So I'm going to make a bold assumption here. My guess, my assumption is to those concerned members of the faith communities, like, are they being told, you don't have to worry about it. We're not going to be, we won't be subjecting you to this. This is only going to be for particular instances. I'm just trying to get to the rationale of why anybody would go, if they are indeed, or if the DFL is simply saying and they're just ignoring whatever concerns they might have. I'm just wondering what type of behind closed doors conversations are being had with regard to this.
Oh, I don't think we need to speculate as to what's being said behind closed doors, because we have what they've been saying without shame out in the open. They're telling us that our religion is discriminatory. They're telling us that to live faithfully as a religious person in the state of Minnesota is an act of civil disobedience under the laws that they're writing. They're saying that. They're telling you that your faith is hateful, that your religious beliefs are bigoted, that you are on par with a chattel slaver if you simply do not want a dude in a dress to be teaching your children in church. That's what they're saying. They're saying it out loud. They're not pulling their punches, so I don't think we should pull ours. This is not a moment to grant somebody who is actively attacking you any benefit of doubt.
I know we're short on time, State Representative Walter Hudson. I'll go just a little bit long here. There's a talkback that came in that's kind of relating to this, and I just wanted to get your thoughts from the iHeartRadio app.
Do the Republicans have the option of not going along and have enough a legislative clout to shut down the government? I know the Democrats control everything, but once again, freedom of speech and freedom of a religion are part of our most important sacred rights, along with the Second Amendment. If the Democrats are going to usurp that, I think that's worth keeping the government shut down over the summer and into the election year. And I think Republicans need to have the courage to do that.
Well, listen, I certainly don't dispute that Republicans need to have courage in this moment. By the way, all of us do, not just elected Republicans. Yeah. I'll tell you what, my courage is has a whole lot less leverage than yours right now.
Yeah.
Because there's only one of me, and there's, you know, potentially 6 million of you. So if you want to see courage, exhibit it. Number one. Number two, just structurally to what's being proposed there, we do not have that ability. There is no budget issue. Right. It's come to think of it, there is one thing we could potentially do, and I don't know if my colleagues are going to appreciate me saying it. They want a bonding bill this year, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, that should be off the table.
Yeah.
That should be off the table.
Walls needs to weigh in on this. He's got a lot on his plate now, but that's his own fault because he belongs to a party that's created all these messes. But this needs to get the attention that it deserves. And so far it hasn't. And I don't know, you know, beyond talking about it on this show, I'm sure that there will be more to be said by the GOP and the legislature this week. At least I certainly hope so. But the fact now that it's gotten to where it's gotten, and I know things move slowly. This just happened a few hours ago. As a matter of fact, it was funny because I was telling Walter that I saw the post from Harry Niska yesterday saying that there was going to be this Senate committee hearing taking place, and I woke up this morning and I couldn't find any information on it. And you had mentioned that something got posted like at 5:30. It's like, well, I was already here and you know, knee deep into prep. So I hopefully by tomorrow we'll have more information and more commentary to share. But this needs to get the attention. And I'll just go back to what I said when this whole thing kind of erupted. And there was a sermon at the church that I went to, and it was talking about the specifics relating to the science of men being men and women being women, and the beliefs of the church with that regard. And we're barreling towards a place where that's going to be hate speech if we continue down this path that we're on. And so you think you're immune? You think your church isn't going to be involved in this or isn't going to be subjected to this? And eventually you know you're wrong if they're able to go and make this happen.
Yeah.
State Representative Walter Hudson, as always, thank you for the time. Good luck. Godspeed to you. And we will talk to you again next week and certainly stay on top of this.
Thank you.